Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. My name is Brigitte Mangale, and I'm a director in the pro bono and human rights practice based in Cape Town. My practice's core focus is women's rights, and I'm privileged to be able to drive strategic and impact litigation and project work that positively supports women and girls across the country. We share this podcast in honor of Women's Month, observed across the country in August each year, and as part of the CDH Women's Empowerment Series. In the South African context, women's empowerment is not just a social imperative, it's a strategic one. For decades, women in this country, particularly women of color, have faced structural barriers to education, economic opportunity, and leadership, along with the double burden of racial and gender discrimination. As a corporate community, we cannot afford to ignore this legacy or its impact on our future. Empowering women means more than just inclusion. It's about ensuring women have access to education, jobs, land, safety, and leadership. When women thrive, communities thrive. Families are healthier and stronger, children stay in school longer, and poverty declines. The evidence is clear. Empowering women drives economic growth and social change. But we must also be honest about the challenges we still face. South Africa continues to battle one of the highest rates of gender-based violence in the world. Economic disparities and underrepresentation in leadership remain stark. Empowering women is key to breaking these cycles and building lasting change. Our Constitution promises equality. Our policies aim to protect and uplift women. But true empowerment takes all of us. Government, business, communities, individuals, all working together to ensure that women are not just heard, but valued, supported, and free. Here to tell us more about how technology can be used to support and empower women is my honored guest and longstanding client and partner to the practice, Ms. Leonora Timmer. Welcome, Leonora, and thank you so much for joining me. Please tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and the work you've dedicated yourself to.
Thanks, Brigitte. So I work for an organization called Gender Rights in Tech, or GRIT, which was founded in 2021. I come from a background in the development sector, predominantly working with young people in key population groups within South Africa, but also across the continent. And in seeing what I did in the work there and the inequality across gender, but also more specifically looking at key population groups, led me to look at how gender-based violence is so underreported in our country and how we can leverage technology to look at access to services, access to the justice system for survivors of gender-based violence.
Thanks very much, Leo. So you've mentioned that you're now at GRIT and you're the managing director at GRIT. If you could please just tell us a little bit more about what this organization does, what its operations are, what its key objectives are.
Sure. At GRIT, we look at how to leverage technology to increase access to services for survivors of gender-based violence. What does this actually mean in day-to-day practice? Means that we have a few solutions that are tech-based that cover a whole different range of holistic support for survivors of gender-based violence. We start with our WhatsApp line, which is just a normal, simple WhatsApp line where people that are experiencing specific barriers to justice can reach out and ask for support. But even also if it's access to psychosocial support, we see that many areas of the country, especially in more rural areas, are very underserved. And a lot of people experiencing violence in this way struggle to access counseling. And when you talked about, the economic impact of empowering women, we have seen quite clearly, if you look at the statistics, how if people don't get the right support following incidents of gender-based violence, it really hampers their ability to function as a member of society. So by making sure people do have the support that they need post an incident of gender-based violence, you increase the chances that they're able to more quickly return to a normal as such lifestyle post this kind of incident. But we also offer legal support through some of our pro bono teams, which Cliff Decker is a huge part of that. So if people have particular struggles to access of justice, this is where they would seek assistance. But then what we saw through time on our WhatsApp line was certain trends, and we also saw how people were really struggling to report. So we went into communities and we asked predominantly women, but not exclusively, how they were using their technology currently, what did their technology look like, why were they not reporting gender-based violence? If they were to report it, what would this look like? Who would respond to it? And then we took that data and we built out a mobile application that has a panic button. It's linked to Armed Response. It's free and data-free. It also audio streams for the first 20 seconds of a panic activation to look at how to leverage cell phone data to increase access to justice. And then it has a vault where you can store photos, audios, videos about incidents that take place that then you can potentially use if you want to open a case either at that moment or at a later date. We're also about to redeploy the tool, and it's also going to include a mapping tool for violations of human rights that are carried out by either the police, the courts, nonprofits, or institutions that are supposed to support survivors of gender-based violence. And then our last tool is an AI chatbot, which I just got back from Messina testing in communities, because we do a lot of co-creation. All of our technology is co-created at a community level, which looks at how to navigate conversations in everyday language or in home language that are often hard to have in your home or in your community, or you are not aware of your rights, or navigating the legal landscape in lay language. So our AI chatbot is called Zuzi. She can chat to you about anything to do with gender-based violence, sexual reproductive health rights, access to abortion, and all of those kind of things. So yeah, that's essentially Grit in a very large nutshell.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. As you know, I've been a huge, huge fan of Grit's work and of the app and what it hopes to achieve since, well, for a few years, I think now. So thank you for just that refresh and recap on its capabilities and the issues that it hopes to address. You mentioned the importance of survivors getting support after the fact and how important that is in their healing journey and seeking access to justice and for many other reasons. You've also described how the app functionality recognizes the importance of bringing key stakeholders together as part of that support system. And these stakeholders are involved in every step of the way in combating GDV and also in supporting survivors. So if we zoom out and we think about our society and in our South African context, hoping to combat GBV, why, in your view, is it so important for there to be collaboration? Why do we need the private sector, communities, individuals, government to all be sort of singing the same song if we have any hope of combating GBV?
The thing about gender-based violence, right, is it's so complicated. It's complicated because of the history and the root causes and where it originates in, but it's also complicated because of the way that it manifests and the way people talk about it and the language used to express it. And I think this is one of the main reasons. I think people often have this idea that gender-based violence sits down the road in poverty or, you know, in immigrants, and they fail to understand that actually gender-based violence sits everywhere. Like, when we look at the cases that we get, it doesn't pick out certain population groups. It doesn't sit in certain places. It really affects women across the board, predominantly women, but not exclusively women. So I think when you're looking then to address it, you need a multi-pronged approach. You need one voice. Like I just said, I just came back from Messina, and one of the activities that we did there was around gender norms, because when you look at gender-based violence, gender norms is one of the things that contribute to gender-based violence, right? So we did this activity with the kids where they all had to stand in a line, and then you say, girls can be leaders. And anyone that agrees with it steps forward. I tell you, first of all, when we asked that question, nobody stepped forward. None of the girls, none of the boys. Like, it wasn't even that the girls stood forward and the boys stood back. Like, no one in the room. This was a very rural school. And then when we told the kids that there are presidents that were women across the world, they looked at us like we'd literally just told them that the whole school was getting $1 million. Like, it was like the weirdest concept for them that there are female leaders. So that's where you need to start. And if this messaging is not coming from government, if it's not coming from the health sector, if it's not coming from teachers, it's this patriarchal gender norms, all of those kind of things that we know contribute towards gender-based violence, they never get disrupted or changed. We had a male facilitator with us, and one of the things was about boys crying. And he debriefed with the boys afterwards around that and talked to them about how not crying makes them hold in so much emotions that then often erupts into violence, right? But if these voices are not coming from men and women, people high up, people low down, then there's no way to make a difference. But also, because it's multifaceted and it displays itself in so many different ways and comes out in different ways, like, you need all parts of society working together to change it, because you can't just take a healthcare approach if someone comes to you and tells you that they're a victim of gender-based violence. You can't just take justice. Well, I appreciate in a law firm is a very specific thing, but when you look in communities, justice might mean a cultural ceremony, a cleansing. Like, justice doesn't necessarily just mean like the law to a lot of these communities. And that's why you need all parts of society coming together to fund it, to talk about it, to advocate about it, because otherwise we're never going to get anywhere.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that. That was really powerful. I mean, you have such insight into what's going on in the different pockets of our society that us in our privileged law firms and, you know, in our cushy spaces can sometimes lose sight of, but we have to remind ourselves of, because as you've so clearly demonstrated, there is a need for us to pull together. And there are many, many reasons why we all need to pull together in addressing this issue. So I'm going to move on to the topic of collaboration and response. I want to zoom in on your thoughts on the role that government should be playing. So you know better than most that often government will adopt themes around these times of honoring and addressing women's rights and women's issues. So in Women's Month and around the 16 days of activism. In a perfect world where government this year and in the years that follow addressed the most urgent issues, what do you think that theme would look like? What do you think is a pressing issue that we need our government to be zooming in on?
Yeah, you know, these themes are the slight vein of my existence. And I also, it's funny, so when I was driving my kids to school this morning, I was like, do you know that tomorrow's Women's Day? And do you know why? And my son was like, to celebrate women. And I was like, it's a little bit more complicated. I think that's where we need to start with these themes is actually, I think a lot of people still have that kind of narrative of like, why is there a Women's Day and not a Man's Day? And breaking that down. But I also think we need to make sure that the themes, so I know there's always like the global theme and then there's the local theme and then looking at how relevant that theme actually is to the situation. I think, again, it's speaking to this disconnect between government and the situation on the ground. And I think these decisions are often made at a government level and then don't speak to the situation on the ground. And then it's so abstract that then nobody really connects with it because it means nothing, right? But I do think that when you look at government and their role in all of this, I think a lot of it, again, comes down to leadership and example. Like, you know, it, unfortunately, it's too often that we see incidents of gender-based violence within government. But I think that itself is not the issue. But essentially, I think, well, of course, it's an issue. But I think it's then the issue is that it's not really addressed or that it's swept under the carpet or it's left to, like, ride. Like, we had that incident in the Western Cape where the elected mayor was convicted of rape of a minor. Like, I don't think there are many countries in the world where the mayor would be elected post a situation. And then what do those narratives say to everyday people that actually it's okay, I can do this kind of crime and then I can go on to become the mayor, right? So I think government needs to look within itself and look at its own messaging and also have this message of, yes, we have Women's Day and this is why we're celebrating. Yes, we have 16 days of activism and this is why we're talking about it. But actually, this is an everyday battle. Like, it's an everyday, we need to take a gender lens to everything in our, and a gender lens doesn't mean excluding men. I think sometimes people get scared when they hear these conversations. They're like, oh, feminist is anti-men, or a gender lens means we're not including men. And it's not. Feminism is about equality for all, every human, right? And a gender lens simply means that you're applying a gendered lens to understand the unique struggles of women within the space to ensure that they are also able to function. When we look at women in politics, women in tech, women in all of these things, the numbers are still like a clear signal of we have a long way to go in this country. And I think until government can lead in those ways and hold those conversations, I think that's what we need to focus more on than coming up with a fancy theme, printing 30,000 t-shirts, and then the next day it's back to business as usual.
Yeah, brilliant insights as always, Leo. Thank you. Thank you for that. We need to get to a place where we are having meaningful conversations and maybe, you know, starting from zero again. And as you've said, you know, come from a place of understanding, you know, what are we trying to achieve here? And then reframe these themes and objectives to start addressing the root cause. So as a final question to you to close out this discussion, which is part of a women's empowerment series, I want to ask you, what do you think true and meaningful empowerment for the woman of South Africa means?
You also know me well enough by now to know that I will speak my mind. I personally really just like the word empowerment. I find the word empowerment, first of all, I just think it's so overused and it's lost a lot of meaning, but I also find it a little bit patronizing. It's like thing of like me as my epicness coming into a space and lifting up all the women as we go, right? And empowering them. And I think sometimes, look, and I know that that's not often what it is, but I just think that it is the word empowerment looks at power, right? And I think that's a lot of what it is like, who holds power within the space? Where does the power lie? How can we disrupt those the power patterns? And I think the problem with empowerment is that the power often still stays with the person that walked into the space with the power in the beginning. And I think that that's what we should be looking at a lot in this is like, historically, especially in South Africa, that has such a complex history, power sat in a very particular space, right? And how much have we done as women to disrupt that power? So I personally do not like the word empower too much. I think what we need to do is listen more. I think we need to go to spaces, hold conversations, and truly listen. What do women want? How can we help facilitate that? What needs to change? And how can it be done practically instead of sitting, you know, having high-level conversations at government, in conferences, in all of these places where we have the same conversation over and over and over again, but actually, truly, what changes within the space? And the other thing I remember listening to Grasa Machel speak, and there was something that she said that I always try and practice in my own life. And that is like, as humans, we are quite competitive. And I think as women, especially higher up in like academics or leadership or whatever, we are also considerably competitive generally, right? I'm generalizing. And I think sometimes we forget how we got to where we were and who pulled us up. And I think that as we climb that ladder, we need to be very cognizant of pulling up as many women as we can with us.
Thank you very much for that, Leo. That's a beautiful note to end on. I really want to thank you for all of your really valuable contributions and insights. I appreciate you joining me and speaking with me today, but even more so, the important work that you and the others in the GRIT team are doing in support of women and girls. Thank you all for listening, and please do join us for our next episode where we continue to discuss important issues facing the women of our country.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.